Welcome to the Giving Black podcast. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Agency Inc. and the Avast Foundation. Agency is an international B Corp certified consulting company offering intelligent philanthropic solutions to socially and environmentally conscious organizations around the world. The Avast Foundation works in partnership with people and communities to knock down barriers to digital freedom and equity. Programs deliver meaningful change and help shape a world where technology plays a positive role in building and sustaining communities.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, Giving Black family, wherever in the world you are. Welcome to episode 8 of the Giving Black podcast, and I am excited to have on the line today and in this episode of Giving Black podcast, we have on the line Mutunrayo Ola Ogun, fashion designer and founder of Ayo Van Elmer. Mutunrayo, how are you?
Good morning to you, Mide. I'm very well. I'm so happy to be on this conversation with you. And obviously what you're doing is great. I'm so glad that there are people like you who have podcasts like this. It's very important that we share what we're doing and that we're out there. Yeah, so well done.
Absolutely. That's our intent. But let me also say that the podcast is made even more special by having wonderful guests like yourself, people who can contribute to the framing of the Black narrative around generosity, people who are global travelers, globally experienced, and have seen the world through many lenses. Always great people to have conversations about philanthropy with. So delighted to have you on the podcast this morning. So for our guests who may not have heard about you, may not know who you are, could I invite you, please, just to share a little bit about yourself? And then let's have a conversation about Black philanthropy.
All right, so I'm going to try to keep it really short. My name is Mutunrayo, and I'm also called Ayo. Those are the last three letters of my name, which is a lot easier. So you can just say Ayo throughout the conversation.
I hear that. I hear what you say. You know, for decades, I went by the name Mide, which is the end of my full name, Olumide. And actually, it was my parents who called me Mide. And I think they did so as a nickname. But over the last few years, I have embraced the fullness of my name. So I often will, first of all, call myself Olumide and then let people know that it can be abbreviated to Mide. Mm-hmm. But the importance of our full names sits with me a lot because our names also channel our identity. Certainly, that is our belief in the Yoruba culture, which both you and I share. So, Mutunrayo, enough from me. Tell us about you.
All right. So, I founded the label Ayo Van Elmer in 2010. So, it's been a long time. And I did that for 11 years. Afterwards, I decided to go to Paris to the HEC, as the English speakers would say, or the Ashu say, as the French would say, to do an executive MBA. And since I founded the label, I have always been very, very thoughtful about keeping an innate desire to be one who gives, one who extends grace and extends whatever it is I have to others. And, you know, it takes me back to when I was a child. I lived in a neighborhood. I don't know, Olumide, you probably grew up in the UK, if I'm correct. And in Nigeria, it's different. I lived in a neighborhood where there was a lot of love. You know, the community was very strong. Sometimes I would sleep over at my neighbors. And I used to be a very, very bright child. And I remember every time we had any sort of break or midterm holidays from school, I'll just gather all the younger ones in the street and try to help them get through their homework and try to explain how to do the maths better and, you know, just like do extracurricular lessons for them. So that, I think my philanthropic self started back then when I was just 10, 11. And that's sort of, I've grown. And the older you get, I believe that the more it becomes your identity. It becomes who you are. You know, I am a giver. I am proud to say that I'm a giver. And the more you give, the more you will give, because it's like a habit that you just train and then you just identify with it. So during my time as a fashion designer, I also studied fashion design at the University of Arts in Vienna. It was a five-year program, which took me 10 years because I would take a year of school to focus on business and then take the next year, go back to school and take another year off. So I did that. I continued to change that for a stretch of 10 years. And it was a very enriching experience. And I had the opportunity to start my own. At that time, I wouldn't say it was an NGO, but to start my own sort of giving back to the community outreach. I would make garments, nice Christmas clothes for young little kids in public schools. And when you say public schools in a Nigerian context, I'm not sure that a lot of people understand what that means. Like, I remember back then I'd met little kids who had only one T-shirt that was completely torn and tattered. And every Christmas, my team and I would make them brand new clothes. This is not a hand-me-down. This is not a secondhand. This is like you put the child in the center, you measure them, they're super excited, and they get a beautiful dress, something that's entirely made for them. And that was important for me because growing up in Nigeria, Christmas was a big deal. I always wanted to have a new dress for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then I started to think about all those little kids who went to very, very underprivileged public schools, who had only one T-shirt, they didn't even have shoes to wear to school. And I thought, oh my God, that would be a great idea, because at the end of every year, when I looked at my inventory, I had so many fabrics left. And then I'll just take out a month and dedicate it to making new clothes for these children.
This is incredible. And for the sake of our listeners, I just want to provide a little bit of clarity. When you talk about public schools, it's very different to the context, say, that we might see in the UK, where public schools are actually private schools,
yes,
which generally are attended by people who are very wealthy. But in the context of Nigeria, and I think most other parts of the world as well, public school is really a state-sponsored school. So it's a government school. And in the Nigerian context, I think it is safe to say that some of those schools are, A, underfunded, but attended also by some of the most economically disadvantaged children in the country. So here you are then, you see that kids are walking around literally with just one T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that is disturbing in any context. And, you know, what I find beautiful about the story, which I really would love for you to continue to share, is that you decided to do something about that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I know that we could argue and say, okay, a child in that kind of state probably needs more food and needs more health care. But if you put yourself in the footwear of a child, food is good and healthcare is great, but what makes them really, really happy? What brings them that sunshine? And for me as a child, I remember back then every time my parents would give me a new dress for Christmas, it was the most beautiful thing. It was totally like I would be walking on cloud nine. And I wanted to share that experience with a child. I wanted to give that to someone who literally, when I talk about one T-shirt, I mean they wear the same T-shirt every day for months. So if they had to wash it, they'll probably just stay in their school uniform, which is completely tattered, and then wait for the T-shirt to dry and then go back into it. So I'm talking about kids who are really economically disadvantaged, as you put it. So that was a very rewarding experience because I had the inventory, I had the fabrics, I had the team, I had the machinery. So I knew that the only thing that it would cost me was the labor or the salaries that I would have to pay to my staff. So I decided to do that. And then I got a contract to work with the, two major TV shows like The Got Talent Show and The Idol, The Voice, those kind of shows, where I was in charge of the wardrobe, but I had to design the wardrobe for the entire team and the contestants as well. And then I spoke to my producers who were South Africans back then at the end of the shows, and I'd say, oh, look, we have so much fabrics left. Is it okay if I don't give it back to you? I could add it to the fabrics that I use for Christmas for kids from local public schools. And they said, yes, please go on. And then I was also able to raise funds. I remember still being in Nigeria at that time. And I was such a nuisance because my brothers worked in big banks, and I would go to the banks and get on everyone's nerves and say, I'm not going to leave until you give me money for one pair of shoes. And somehow I was able to raise money to buy hundreds of footwear because I wanted to give them a complete outfit, a complete look. And so I was able to do that. That was so I took advantage of my brothers in the big banks. And that was very interesting. Yeah, so wow. That was how that went.
Wow. What a story. I know you have much more to share with us about how you have merged the world of fashion and philanthropy. But I want to ask you a question, just based on what you had shared before. So this passion for giving back, for being generous, for helping others, started when you were very, very young, at the age of 10. Most people at the age of 10 are just kind of really playing with friends and toys. But, you know, you developed this wonderful social spirit, philanthropic spirit. And I want to ask you, why? Why did you begin to think in this way at such a young age? What was it that you saw, perhaps from your parents or in your community, that really kind of sparked this call to action that you took on?
So like I mentioned, when I was a child, I was a very bright child. I had very good results. And because my community was very closely knit and I lived in a street where everybody knew what everyone was doing and parents shared a lot, I was often talked about. And my parents would, parents would tell each other how their kids were doing. And I realized, oh, my God, other kids are struggling. What can I do? How can I share? How can I help? So I think for me, it was an innate desire to just give what I have. Yeah, and it's still there, and it's grown so much bigger than I could ever imagine. And
comes from the heart.
Yeah, it's from the heart. And I believe that every human has that innate ability, innate strength, because we are one. And so we can choose to connect to it. And some of us might find it at a later stage. Some of us might connect as early as 10 or even earlier. And we can choose to do that, or we can choose to look away. So I guess it's a choice of not only having it there as an innate thing, but also choosing to share, you know? So I think it's that. It's knowing, okay, there's a problem somewhere. What can I do about it? It's a natural instinct that says, I can fix this. I can solve this. I can help this person. And that's it.
Welcome to the Giving Black Podcast, the world's first podcast dedicated to Black philanthropy and generosity. Here, you can listen to real-life stories that honor the culture and tradition of giving among Black people, from the African continent to the Caribbean, Europe to North America, South America, and across the globe. The Giving Black Podcast is a series of conversations about building Black community, or as the Bantu would call it, Ubuntu. We're going to capture stories about giving, about sharing, about philanthropy, and about love in the global Black community, and speak directly with people who are doing incredible things by sharing what they have. We want to learn what they know, so we can preserve this knowledge and capture stories about philanthropy. What is philanthropy? It is the heartbeat of the world, the reciprocal exchange of generosity between people. I am your host, Olumide Akeribusi. You'll get to know me, as most people do, as Mide. A lot of the actions I've seen taken by fashion labels are kind of linked to make one, give one. So, you know, I guess Tom's Shoes is probably the best known in the world. You know, for every pair that is made or sold, shall I say, another pair is given. But you're taking fashion and philanthropy to an entirely different level. And I wonder if you can share with our listeners where your label and your philanthropic efforts merge today. What are you up to today in the world of fashion and philanthropy?
So today, as I do not practice as a fashion designer at the moment, and I'm probably not going to be doing that in the near future, as I'm employed now and I work for Christian Dior, I have sort of carved, before I even started to apply, before I decided to quit being a fashion designer for my brand, I laid out a plan and I said to myself, okay, I don't want to lose the spirit. I don't want it to get rusty and just die away. So I'm going to find out, I'm going to create a sort of a roadmap to stay on the road, to keep walking this path until I come back. Because I am a natural artist. And for me, art comes to me very naturally. And I love that I've had people like great designers like Karl Lagerfeld and Vivienne Westwood, for example. They're both late now, but they worked until they passed away. And that's the way I see my future. I see me retiring and then working another 15, 20 years, not because it's work, but because it's love, because it's something I love to do. Mm-hmm. And I will be able to nurture a young African creative. That's my dream. I work with a charity now, which, you know, is an orphanage. And by that time, this young kids would have grown into late teenagers or young adults. And the ones that are creative, how can I nurture them? How can I give back? And I'm already building those blocks right now. I'm laying that foundation right now. And I believe that when I get to that point, a group like LVMH would have seen and realized how much of philanthropy I've done in my past. And I can ask them to key into something like that, which for them would be peanuts at that time, you know, because I would have served them so long, probably 15, 20 years. I don't know. I would have served them so long. So working today, being an employee today is a part of the journey, is a part of the dream, which gives me a very, very purposeful orientation towards my job, because I know it's not just a job, it's a vision, it's part of my purpose. So that way I can also give my best at work, because I know I'm not there just there for me, I'm there for hundreds of African children that I will be able to empower in the later future. So that's where I stand right now.
Wow. I have to say that If I think forward about my own life, I can definitely with ease think about the next year and possibly the next five. But I don't think I've ever met anybody who has a vision for the next 15 and even 20 years. And I think that takes a lot of determination. Mm. And so I want to ask you maybe just a kind of tangential question that may help people like me and also our listeners. When you think about the future of your own philanthropy, how do you feel about kind of building teams, building a movement, engaging others in your vision and the direction that you want to go? How has that worked for you? Because often what I see is that our philanthropy sometimes is quite isolated. But you mentioned that you want to bring organizations like Louis Vuitton, those that you serve and maybe even partner with, into that vision as well. So how does one do that so it isn't a kind of single isolated idea? It's a movement, if you like.
So right now, I'm a partner of two NGOs. One is in Australia. The founder is Iranian, but he was born in Austria, and he's doing a lot in Uganda, very respectable work. I really love him. And the other one is the orphanage in Jos Plateau in Nigeria. Now, what I've done is I've sort of keyed myself into these communities, and I'm giving them as much as I can now, so that I know they're always going to be there because I see the dedication. I see that it's who they are. So first of all, I had to find, I think naturally, I believe in energies. I believe that what you're looking for finds you. And somehow these two guys, one is female, one is male, they came into my life and I've just keyed into them. And I've realized that I don't have to be isolated. I don't have to be the one at the wheel. I can support them. I can dedicate time to the projects they're doing on a monthly basis, on an annual basis, as often as I am able. So I think being the part of a community now, being the part of a team, I think community is really the right word. Because when I look at the Banga project, which is based in Austria but works in Uganda, I think there are 50 of us, and we're just two of us are Africans. And right. you see that there are people who are really passionate about doing something, about giving back. And when you key in now and you all grow up together, you know, you all come back together in the next 10, 15, 20 years, then you can look back and say, we've always been there. And then you have a story that is so rich that you can use to then apply for, use to get, to connect with whatever it is you're connecting, because there's a track record of positivity, of impacting lives. So I think it's that for me, really, finding a community and keying into it and just giving them all you can, even if it's not yours. So I don't think that charity or philanthropy has to be isolated. And when I can't do it myself, I just go and support somebody else's dream.
I love that. I love that. There's so much wisdom in what you share. Charity needn't be isolated. And certainly, I think I personally would love to see more collaboration with philanthropically minded people, particularly within the Black community, where, you know, we can pull to the exact example that you have shared, where we can pull our resources, pull our expertise, our connections, so that, you know, it's not just one of us doing this, but it is a collective. And, you know, the reason I ask that question is because I think about the African nature of philanthropy, which in the Bantu language certainly is epitomized by the word Ubuntu. I am because we are. And it intimates that actually this is not something that is singular. It's not an act of one person. It is an act of everybody, you know, strength in numbers approach. And I think that's what's at the heart of what you were talking about, to say that, you know, if you create those networks early on, then by the time you arrive at your destination, which is 10, 15 years in front of you, you've got that movement. And I think that's where the power of Black philanthropy lies, in the collective power of it, rather than the individualized power. And I think, you know, that's really important. And perhaps in contrast to models of philanthropy that we see in the global north, where it is very isolated, it is highly individualized.
Mm-hmm.
So let's pivot a little bit then, because I think, you know, you're in a place where you are both changing, preparing, planning, strategizing. What support do you need at this moment in time to realize the great vision that you have for African communities and your the philanthropic vision that you have shared?
At the moment, the support that I need is maybe more near future oriented, like something I could do in the next 2-3 years, or also this year, which would be bringing more light and more raising more awareness for this communities or these NGOs that I support. How can I help them to raise funds in a more efficient way? How can I get them to be seen? How can I share their story? What can I do? And so support in that area would be great. Like, I really want to support them and help them raise funds. It's never enough. There's always a need. There's always things going on. And I have lived in Africa for the last 11, 12 years. Most of the times I would go and come back a lot in 1 year. So I'm very aware, I'm very conscious of how tough, how difficult things can be and how, you know, it's like a consistent roller coaster of needs. You never get out of that, yeah. Especially if you run an orphanage. I mean, if you put yourself in the shoes of Grace, my friend who runs the orphanage in Jos, she's got about 51 children. And in an environment as tough as Jos play to. And you can imagine how much you need to support 51 children. It's a very, very expensive course. And so helping her. I mean, they often have a lot of issues from... I remember the last time I was trying to help her raise funds. They were being kicked out of the property where they've been for 7 years because some developer bought it and wanted to build a resort or something. So that was a big blow to them. And it's always a struggle. There's always something going on. So helping them to raise funds or helping them to find property or rent that is can be consistent would be great, as well as the one in Uganda. So yeah. It's the needs are endless.
That much we know, particularly in an African context for many reasons, which we won't have time to get into in this conversation, but our colonial past and prior to that, the impact of slavery on our respective countries on the African continent is something from which Africans are still recovering. And so... just to give context, Jos Plateau is literally in the center of Nigeria. It is in the Savannah region. It is probably amongst the least structurally developed parts of Nigeria, if you set aside the city of Abuja. And so, Motunrayo, I really want our listeners to have the information they need so that if they do want to support you, they know how they can do that. So please share the names of the two organizations that you are supporting now. And I'll also ask you, please, just to share how our listeners may contact you directly. So let's start with the nonprofit organization that you are supporting in Jos Plateau, the Children's Orphanage. Tell us a little bit about that. What's it called?
So that one is called, the one in Jos Plateau is called Kids with a Vision.
Kids with a Vision.
Kids with a Vision, yes.
Right. And you've got 51 kids that you are supporting right now. 51 orphans, just to be clear.
Yes. And they often say KWAF, because that would be like saying Kids with a Vision if you just use the acronym. The founder is Grace Adams, and I started a website for her that I called fundkidswithavision.org. So you can still find it online and you can see how much has been donated, because I love to be very transparent. And at the moment, they found another property that they've moved into. So they sort of like trying to get themselves back on their feet. And there's a lot you can do, from devoting yourself to pay the school fees of one of the kids, or to helping them with health care, or paying a part of the rent, because in Nigeria we pay rent on an annual basis, which always makes it very heavy. It's not like in Europe where you pay per month. So very often they need a huge amount of money, which is typically, I would say, around $10,000 per year for their rent. I'm going to check with her how much she's paying on the new property, on the new site they found. So you can reach out to me very easily. I'm very easy to find. I use LinkedIn very much. So my name is Mutun Rayo Ola Ogun. Otherwise, you can just ask Mide and I'm sure he'll connect you.
Absolutely. I'll make sure all of this information is available for our listeners in the write-up for this podcast episode. So that's KIWAV, or Kids with a Vision. And tell us about the work you're involved in Uganda.
So the one in Uganda is called Banga Project. It's spelled B-B-A-N-G-A. And most times people don't know how to pronounce two B's following each other, so you just call it B. So it's just Banga Project. You'll find their website also online. It was founded by Sally, an Iranian who was born and raised in Vienna, but lives between Vienna and Kalangala. Kalangala is an island in the Sesa region of Uganda. Amazing work he's doing. He's currently building a school for children. They do a lot of handcrafts for with women. So they train Ugandan women to create things so that they don't have to be completely dependent on their male partners. And this also helps to reduce the rate of violence against, that these women have to go through, and just to make them self-sufficient. So a lot of crafts are done, from accessories to little handmade toys for children. So what I did last year was help them build a website where these items could be bought online. And this I also shared on my LinkedIn, and we're planning to relaunch properly once again this year. You'll find this information on my LinkedIn or on their website, bangaproject.org.
Wow. I knew when I reached out to you that we would have a phenomenal discussion, both about your drivers for philanthropy and the wonderful projects that you are involved in, your deep experience in the world of fashion. And so I just want to thank you and also encourage our listeners, please do look out for the Banga Project, and KIWAV will post all the details in our write-up to this episode. Please check out Mutun Rayo and her work. Please support her philanthropy and philanthropic efforts as well. As you know, this is steeped in a deep vision that goes way beyond today, well into the next couple of decades, in fact. And Mutun Rayo, I think you have left me with, even myself, just a thought around how might I get involved. So I'd love to have a conversation with you offline about that, particularly around the fundraising expertise that both organizations may need. Happy to continue that conversation.
I think I'll just add something very quickly. It just came to my mind. What I did last February, when I knew that I was shutting down my brand, was I sold a lot of pieces from my collections that I've made through the years, which you will find on iovanelma.com. I sold them at a very discounted price, and the payments were made directly to the orphanage. And I will be back in Nigeria this year in May, and I'm going to see how I can collaborate with persons that I know who run boutiques and sell some of these items again, and just get them to pay directly to the orphanage. So I'm going to work on that this May. So if you're interested in really beautiful items, you can also check my website. I'll be happy to sell them to you and send the money, right? So 100% of the proceeds will go to the orphanage. I just wanted to chip that in.
I love that. I love that. The interesting piece of this conversation that we left out was my own particular interest in fashion. Years and years ago, when I was young, I was well and truly into fashion. And, you know, as a South London boy, you'll understand when I say this, you had to turn up, right? Especially going to the parties and the clubs, you had to be on the upper end of fashion. And so I led my life that way until I started to have kids and could no longer afford high fashion. But I will be more than willing to check out your website, details of which I'll also provide to our listeners. And folks, let us buy Ayor Van Elmer goods and products and fashion items so that kids in the Kiwab orphanage can get the support they need. And
thank you.
Wow, Mutunrayo. What more can we say? Sadly, coming to the end of our conversation, I often can be found stating that I never like to have the final word in our conversation. So that being the case, might I hand the mic over to you for any final words? But before I do so, I want to thank you for such a stimulating and inspiring conversation. Really appreciate you and your time.
Thank you very much, Olumide, and thank you very much for having me. Thank you for your time, for the opportunity to reach out to your community. What I would like to say as my closing words, I woke up this morning thinking about how often I listened to a CEO last night, and he was introduced as a CEO and a philanthropist. And I started to think about that word philanthropy and why do we often use it in the context of incredibly successful people? Like, I mean, people who are CEOs, who are presidents, who are, you know, Oprah Winfrey and so on. And I just want to encourage us that we don't have to wait until we become that. You know, yeah. There's always a place in our heart to be a philanthropist. In fact, everyone who's open to giving is a philanthropist. So I want to encourage us that we don't have to be millionaires. We don't have to be the most successful key influencers in the tech industry or in FCNGs or whatever it is. You are a philanthropist if you choose to give and if you just cultivate that habit on a regular basis. And it's, I want to tell you from experience, it's a beautiful, joyful thing. It's so rewarding and it's such a blessing. I don't want to go into the spiritual side of it now, but I believe you get the message. So I like to close on that. Thank you, Olumide. Thank you very much once again.
We'll have to have you back for the spiritual side of this, for sure. I think much of what we do is spiritual. I often like to think of myself, just me, as mind, body, and soul. And we're so good at taking care of our bodies. You know, we eat well, we exercise, we read to nurture our minds. And then our spiritual selves, often we neglect that side of things. And so it's that spirit actually that drives us, I believe, to good works. And I'm glad that you shared the light into your spirit this morning and afternoon where you are. I'm deeply, deeply appreciative of you and your work and your inspiration. And I look forward to us continuing the conversation.
Thank you very much, Olumide. I'll be happy to be back.